Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. The gang's all here, just as it's always been. Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Heck yeah, dude. And we always recorded just before midnight or after midnight Eastern Coast time. That's what we do. We always record after eclipses, too.
Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Weird things, weird things, weird things at midnight. Huzzah!
Blood Moon, man. Did you guys see it?
No, much
I
too
saw me. A little sliver of it. It was out. It was actually right. If I would have stopped looking at my computer for 5 seconds and like actually just looked out my window, it was like framed right in front of me. And I only saw it after it was just kind of a sliver, a blood trickle moon.
They call it a light day. We had my whole family over. We had the kids up. We had my parents come over. I busted out the 8-inch Dobsonian telescope, and we had hazy skies overhead. So we had to go look at the NASA feed, and NASA was busy retransmitting footage from somebody who wouldn't reposition his telescope, and it was very frustrating.
Man, so, hazy skies over Austin. That Willie Nelson's a blessing and a curse.
So I was racing back from the airport to go pick up my car, and then I'm outside my friend's house, and I go look. I'm like, oh, cool, look, the blood moon. Perfect, right over the top of the house, blood moon. Wasn't even trying.
By the way, there was a really good video that I'm sure Neshcom will put up on the second screen any second right now, but it was from NASA explaining why the blood moon is red. And what's funny is I've seen a number of eclipses, and it's always been like, you know, that's part of it is like, you know, it eclipses and then it goes kind of a blood red color. But then it made the simplest metaphor that I really dug, which is imagine if you're sitting on the surface of the moon looking at the sun, and it showed an animation of the Earth eclipsing, and basically it showed essentially a giant version of a sunset. When you're on Earth and the sun sets, i.e. the sun goes behind the surface of the planet, you get this giant red sky, and your face is awash with red light from the scattering of the rays, right? So if you're all the way on the moon when the exact same thing happens, well, instead, you know, the Earth crosses over in front of the sun, and the entire Earth is outlined by a ring of red scattered light, and that's what shines on your face. So the red you see on the moon is the red from the sunlight sky that you would see from the perspective if you were standing on the moon.
So that's great, because I was outside, and somebody asked me to go, like, so what caused that? I said, well, you know, you get the combination of a supermoon and then an eclipse. So the moon is closest as it is, and then an Earth eclipse coming between them. I go, oh, good. I go, I don't know what that means. I said, that's a description, not an explanation. They go, oh, wow, it sounded really good. I go, yeah, it's like if you ask me magnetics, I'd say, well, there are these north and south fields. When they come in, like, I can describe it. I can't explain it.
Yeah, well, and in this case, like, if you search for Science Casts a tetrad of lunar eclipses, it's going to break it all down for you. And it basically shows, I'm going to cut right to the animation where it shows you, here we go, let's take a look at this right here.
Or Earth's shadow, but not all the way. So only a fraction of the moon is darkened.
That's a partial eclipse. I don't think this is the exact one that I saw.
During the 24th interval, let's go. Beginning around 3 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast.
Yeah, this is an older one from a year ago. But so it looks like they're recycling the same animations.
Yeah. Easy to see. But yeah, so you get that it's because the light coming from the sun going through the Earth's atmosphere is illuminating the moon. Got it.
Correct. But again, like if picture yourself standing on the surface of the moon.
In other words, witchcraft. Got it.
Picture yourself standing on the moon and looking at the Earth, and you'll see just like when the moon. Just like you see a halo around the moon during a solar eclipse, you see the same thing, and the red light shines all over the planet. That's why we get a blood moon.
Sweet. I was on a cryptozoology panel, speaking of explanations.
What? Okay,
so I was going to say, wait, before we get, do we know, what is the history of, like, what a blood moon has signified? Like in an era when the explanations were far less sophisticated than the ones we just got by looking at YouTube, and people would just, you know, make up their own reasons why the moon.
Oh,
would turn.
You mean back when they would go to like Yahoo Video to find out what was going on?
Exactly.
Or back when they used to use RSS feeds to download to their iPod minis. That was a crazy time.
So if I just type blood moon mythology, myths and superstitions, we have, you know, that it is the sign of the apocalypse. Mothers refuse to have their babies out in the moonlight for fear of bad luck during the blood moon.
Apparently the Mormon church had to issue a statement telling there were some Mormon groups that were a little bit concerned, like, hey, life is going to be filled with its usual tribulations, but we have no cause to believe that this is the apocalypse.
Well, and keep in mind also, like, it's doubly significant that we have, first of all, an eclipse during a supermoon, which is when it's at the, not apogee, the perigee, as close to the Earth as it's going to get, which means it's the biggest it's going to be. But also the harvest moon was significant because in a pre-electricity era, you know, there are certain foods that you have to harvest as much as you can, as fast as you can. And so the best way to do that, of course, was to coordinate that with the harvest moon, because you could work by moonlight until late. And so everything all happening at the same time, I believe, if I saw correctly, according to my source, a.k.a. Twitter, 2033 is the next time you can cast your blood magic on your enemies.
Oh, dude, there's a whole thing of lunar eclipse myths.
When's the next time we get a blood moon?
He asked Siri subtly in the middle of his podcast.
When's the next time we're getting a blood moon?
He said again to Siri, who clearly didn't listen the first time.
Oh, look at this. All right. The ancient Mesopotamians saw lunar eclipses as an assault on the moon, but in their stories, the assailants were demons. So demons were taking out the moon. Like, imagine, like, that's like the law of the land. Like, you're guiding you're the guiding force in your life, either your parents or other people that are raising you. They're like, yeah, anyway, so this is what you do to survive, and this is what reproduction is. Also, demons attack the moon periodically, so you got to watch out for the demons.
I mean, how is that any difference from our complete out of whack with the evidence fear of traveling kidnappers and pedophiles or whatever? Like, oh, well, as you know, tonight's the night the pedophiles all stick razor blades in your candy and give it to you, even though there's not a single recorded case of that ever happening.
Well, I mean, the difference would be that, like, there are pedophiles.
No, but that's just it. The whole like poisoning of candy thing is
No. I understand that application of lunatics and terrorists and pedophiles is unfounded, right?
Right.
But there are no such thing, theoretically, as moon attacking demons.
fair enough. But I don't know. I feel like in many ways we live in the same kind of bizarre, upside down world.
Yeah, we've thinned it out though. Like we've always had the little trickle of hysteria, and now it's just like, oh, Jerry's gonna go crazy, and not like, demons are eating the moon tonight. Well, it's a good thing the moon beat them. Go moon.
Fair enough. By the way, the New York Times confirms that the next time we have a super bloody moon, Maxi Day, will not be until 2033.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
In 1974, an 8-year-old Houston boy named Timothy O'Brien died after eating cyanide-laced pixie sticks while trick-or-treating.
Yeah, guess what?
All right.
There is a twist to this, because yes, this sounds pretty bad.
Although the poison initially looked like it might have been the work of a deranged homeowner, the investigation of O'Brien's murder soon centered on his father, Ronald Clark O'Brien.
That's the
Turned out the dad took out a hefty life insurance on both of his kids.
Oh, that's double terrible. Are you kidding me? Oh, my God. So, God.
That's disgusting. In fact, anybody who ever grew up around Houston should really be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah, and move as far away as Austin instantly, 2.5 hours down the road, in order to feel safe from the wiles of Houston. Yeah, dude, how weird is it that...
Oh, wait, Brian.
What?
Destroy your universe for you right now. In 2000, James Joseph Smith of Minneapolis allegedly stuck needles in a Snickers bar he handed out to trick-or-treaters. So there!
Oh, really?
Well, I'm
No.
Kids have been getting like pot candy too, but yeah, I mean, it's not a thing that's like a thing. It's like, oh, I'm one of those people when I drive late at night and people don't have their headlights on, I turn on my lights and flash. I'm like, hey, turn on your headlights. And I have people go, oh, don't do that. That's a gang thing. I'm like, I remember in like middle school and they read an announcement from some. Before we had stupid email, we had stupid faxes that went around, and we had this faculty member like, don't flash your lights because gangs are going around. And I'm like, this sounds stupid and dangerous. I'm sure people are going to die because we're terrified of these, you know, hey, Jefe, you want to get into our gang? Then drive without your lights on. You know, these guys are, by the way, from Oregon. They, you know, are
not there was no race implied.
All right, let's bring a little decorum to this conversation as I bring to you the moon eclipse myths of the Pomo people of Northern California. According to Pomo myth...
Of the Pomo people of Northern California.
Pomo people. Pomo. according to the myths, an eclipse would happen when a bear wandering along the Milky Way met the sun. When the sun refused to get out of its way, the bear challenged the sun to a fight. The scrap that ensued left the sun eclipsed for a brief period of time until finally the bear moved on.
Dude, that sounds 100% totally legit and probably would have kept my daughter from throwing a fit earlier today if I explained to her that a giant bear was in a fight with the freaking sun. Instead, she was too pissed off at the clouds, saying like, I've got school tomorrow and there's clouds between me and this moon. She was not happy.
I mean, listen, this is going to be the superhero origin story that leads her to inventing cloud dispersing technology.
Supervillain story.
Either way. Okay. I mean, she could be mad that
she's
moon.
She's doing something, you know, she's doing something to the life.
Exactly. Not like that dumb son who won't get out of the poor bear's way, has to challenge him to a fight.
F you, son. You know, you're a real C-word.
Speaking of sketchy explanations, I'm on this panel at Salt Lake Comic-Con for cryptozoology.
Okay, real quick, and I know that there's something you want to get to, but I want to know the beforehand, because obviously we are three skeptics on weird things, and we've described before that we're three guys who don't believe in Sasquatch, but we think he's awesome. What's it like to be on that panel? I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that there's some people maybe not of the same skeptical bent as the three of us.
So... there were two guys on the panel, four people. Two of them actually had Bigfoot sightings, which I'm jealous of. One guy hasn't, but he collects Bigfoot stories. And he was relieved that I was there because then I got to be the skeptic. And I'm like – and it's funny because like I'm skeptic in the softest way possible where I'm like, hey, listen, you know, I give my explanation about, you know, we don't find chimpanzee fossils. You know, that you know, there's a lot of history we don't know. I think a lot of animal extinctions happened later than we often realize. I'm open to it. You know, I'm like, but, you know, when this discussion starts with, hey, is Bigfoot an interdimensional traveler? Or is he an alien?
I mean, it makes sense, right? We ain't seen
like
no
idiots.
Bigfoot
we
bones.
Left out time travel. That was like when you and I walked in on this Discovery Channel, you know, audition thing, and the discussion about UFOs was, you know, there was like, well, they're either interdimensional, you know, or you know, they come from other planets, and somebody says, well, no, maybe they're time travelers too, and you know, and we're like, oh, those are the only three possibilities here. Okay.
By the way, that was an extraordinary experience, and I feel like there's enough time between that happening and now that we could at least sketch the broad strokes. Like that was one of the first times you and I hung out, and it was a Discovery show that they were searching for hosts from, and the show never ended up happening because there was a change in the higher ups. But they had what they called a chemistry test, and they brought in kind of a who's who of both the skeptical world and the believer world, because they wanted to pair a believer and a skeptic or whatever.
And it was like an odd couple situation.
Yeah. And it was amazing because like I had met, I think only a week or two before was the first time I had ever had a meal with you, Andrew. And it was, and the two of us just instantly connected. It was like every time somebody said certain stuff, my eyes would scan, and I would always find the two of us looking at each other from across the room the slightest of nods.
Yeah. I went up to the people they're calling people in by groups, and I go up there, and I look, and I see Brian and I aren't together. And I tell the girl, I said, hey, why don't you put Brian and I together for a chemistry test with the other people? And she's like, oh, okay. And then we went in and we did the thing together, and the feedback was we rocked it.
It was, and
they decided they weren't going to do the show.
Yeah, no, I gotta feel like if they were going to do the show, we would have been a slam dunk on that, because there was one moment that I just remember us pedaling around in chairs on wheels, starting our own game of I don't know, ice hockey. Basically, yes. it was an amazing experience.
And after the show, I have an idea for a show that the three of us should pitch, the How Weird Things Would Work. Just talking to you right now, it all came together for me. So I have the show we should do.
Holy cow. So you're saying, wait, it just struck you like a bolt of lightning what weird things the TV show would look like.
Like a telepathic message from Bigfoot, which apparently he can do. And it's like, it was a weird sort of situation to be in, because I'm, two very nice people who have very real experiences to them encountering Bigfoot that I don't believe, but I would like to, but it was just one of them said something alluded to, like, oh yeah, I had a sighting. Yeah, we were taping a show about Bigfoot, so I'm under an NDA and I can't see this. I'm like, oh, you're recording a show about Bigfoot and there are producers involved trying to get the show sold, and you guys saw Bigfoot.
How about that?
It's like those ghost shows, and it's like we have friends that work on those ghost shows. There's always somebody whose job is to.
Oh dude, we've talked about this. I think it's been long enough, and I haven't said who, but there was a guy who worked on Hacking the System who told me that they used to whenever they requested that he turned to channel 13. That was code for make a freaking ghost appear, damn it. And whether it was a rock being thrown or a wall being hit or whatever.
The people on the shows, they don't want to be like, hey, I saw the sound guy. They're like, well, you know what? Season 2 is coming up. We got to slim down that cast.
Well, to hear the guy tell it, the folks who were on the show were true believers to begin with, right?
Yeah.
And that they genuinely, it's no secret that in reality programming, sometimes you need to redo a segment so that you have a complete coverage for it, and so these people in particular, according to the story that I heard, were like, no, I don't do a second take. This is real. We're looking for Bigfoot. And then somebody gets told to turn to channel 13. And then suddenly, they're all like, all right, well, look, if you're not going to do it again, we're going to get it right the first time. And that's good. We're going to make sure Bigfoot makes that stomping loud enough everyone hears it.
So I go up there and, like, when it comes around for like opinions, I said, listen, I said, I was really into Bigfoot when I was a kid. I would like to have thought that 25 years later, as our technology for night vision cameras, animal cameras, satellite images, all this sort of stuff, that if it's a thing that has been alive and out there, we would have something. I said, I think the fact that we don't, and the explanations have become more exotic about him being a time traveler and all this other stuff, leads me to believe that, maybe there's something not there. Anyhow, I was there with my friends, the Winter Twins, and I wasn't at their booth, but somebody came up to the booth to say, I think he's way too skeptical. I'd like to tell him to prove to him that it's real or whatever. It's like,
and so
please.
Did he?
I think that's and the funny thing is that, by and large, we kind of move either socially or professionally in skeptic circles, and we're the ones that are like, hey, jerks, why do you stop being such jerks about awesome stuff like Bigfoot and everything? And then you find yourself on a panel where it's like, hey, wait, can we have like no element of like, hey, we really like even in the thought exercise for which we love of like how to design and find Bigfoot. Like, this is stuff we love talking about. Like, we are obsessed with. And that's always whenever I would do interviews for Weird Things with Bigfoot hunters, that was always what I like. I'm like, no. Okay. What's your hunting pattern? Like, what do you think? What is Bigfoot's grazing and hunting habits? How do you look to find him? And like the nooks and crannies and details there, I think, are fascinating and safe for everybody. But when it's just like, okay, so yeah, he's either an alien or, he came from a different dimension. And it's like, all right, well, I don't know. It's like sci-fi that just, it's like, oh, he's got a magic ray gun and he just shoots it and just turns into whatever he wants.
The thing is like, you can go to that space, but you better be as good as Dan Harmon when you write that Rick and Morty episode. It's like freaking, go ahead and.
No, they would. Justin Roiland and Dan Harmon would never be caught dead with such a loosey-goosey MacGuffin.
Well, and the thing that the frame that I kind of keep coming back to is that, we get these people like, you got to keep an open mind. And I'm like, listen, I can tell you what would convince me there's Bigfoot. What would convince you He ain't there. Nothing. Who has the closed mind?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's and that's fair enough. And that's not to say that. Yeah. I don't know. It's tough because there is this. I keep going back to what economists call the sunk cost fallacy, right? The belief that it's like, well, I can't do blank because if I do, it means I've wasted my life. Yep. And it's and they call it they don't call it the sunk cost good idea. They call it the sunk cost fallacy because it doesn't matter how much you spent. If you bought a Eric Clapton CD and walked outside and it immediately fell to the ground and broke in two, it doesn't matter that you just paid for it once. The question is, do you want that Eric Clapton CD or not? If you do, you turn around right back inside and you go buy another one.
Yeah, I want to believe. And I want to believe that you're going to support the Weird Things podcast because when there's good Bigfoot evidence, we'll be the first ones on these microphones to tell you about it.
Oh, are you kidding
me?
Yeah,
no. The media, whatever.
In the biggest way, too, man. Oh, no. It looks like we've dropped down from our awesome 666 and 66 cents per episode. We're at a paltry $603 per episode. We got to fix this, beautiful people.
Man, I tell you what, you need to get on your horse right now. Head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings because I'm going to tell you this. Folks, you have been through the valley of us having weird times and some of us not being on the show and other people being on the show and all sorts of loosey-goosey lineups. Hell no.
Nope.
We are at the where we're done. We're back to regular schedule. We are here. We're near, get used to it.
We're here, we're nearby. Hi, that's what we like to say.
Hello, friends.
Hello, Fred.
We're here and we're queering the impossible.
So, for the record, yeah, man, I believe I'm here for the rest of the year. What about you, Justin? Are you have crazy schedule?
I'm getting on a plane until late October.
Mm. All right, look, now's a good time. You got good episodes coming up, we promise.
Gentlemen.
Yeah, dude, no, super, super awesome. And thank you to everybody who does it. And big thank you to our illustrious producer, Bryce Neshcom Castillo, for being rad and being up and ready to rock and roll no matter what time we're ready to do an episode.
Yeah.
So I got to also be on a biotech panel. And I talked – they only had like one scientist, a physicist on there. And he was a fascinating guy who's has a company that knows how to make precise nano-sized particles using lasers and stuff, and he was telling me some amazing stuff. Like, you go to the website for this, it's called Attostat, and I'm not smart enough to Attostat. I'm not smart enough to know if this is legit or not, but he was a really cool guy, and like they found ways to use like nano-sized particles to kill bacteria. They've actually been able to apparently treat people with MRSA. You know, make things anti-corrosive and really, really, really incredible types of stuff there.
Now, when you describe that, are you talking about machinery that like stabs bacteria or just surfaces that are inherently unpleasant for bacteria to
sit creating
upon?
Surfaces that are unpleasant for bacteria that interfere with some processes or whatever in which they function.
And by the way, there's certainly precedent for that. Like, for example, silver is is inherently antimicrobial.
Exactly. And gold can have those properties, too, when you get it to a nanoscale. And what they do is, when they bring it down to these levels, and like you can make these things a precise – you can make them a precise size. So if you take a bacteria or something that has a specific size receptor or something in it, they can make a particle that might affect that or interfere with the process, whatever. We know that silver and things like that can affect bacteria and do that. So, they're starting, I'm one of these people that's like, this sounds crazy, they've had independent laboratory tests where they say the particles have eradicated, bacteria, including E. coli, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus, and MRSA, which is MRSA, actually. So they've been doing independent tests on these things. So
I'll tell you what, it's harder now. I'm going to overgeneralize, and most likely you could make a case to the contrary, but part of me wants to say it's harder now to dismiss out of hand crackpot dreamers, not to call them crackpots, but big-scale dreamers that come out of nowhere than ever before, because we're entering an age where anybody has the resources. You know, let's say just 100 years ago, if your child had a mysterious illness that you could maybe look at a few medical journals, pretty much everything you learned would be through the gateway of your doctor, right? Nowadays, we have some friends that we had over for lunch the other day, and they had a child who had a extraordinarily rare syndrome, and she was able to, on the internet, read all of the medical papers on this thing to date, and that when she went to the doctor basically came back and quoted back the exact same papers she'd already read, and she was able to say, no, I've read those papers. If you read this, you need to factor in this. There's two types of it. Are you aware of that? You know, there's this type and that type. And then he's like, oh, let me look again. And then before you know it, that you know, she's off helping to organize the first Facebook group, and you know, that recognizes children with this syndrome, and that they, you know, all of a sudden, without trying to be, she's just a concerned mom who wants to learn as much as she can about what's going on with her kid. And all of a sudden, she's heading up essentially the entire sample pool of all the known cases of this disease on the planet. And this is the kind of thing that you simply could not do 100 years ago. And so when you see stuff like this about, you know, nanoparticles that make high promises, I mean, you know, maybe it's overstated, or maybe it's exactly 100% right. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm fascinated, and I think that we, you know, need to, you know, what this guy wants is, you know, a better path to be able to get these things tested and have the FDA approve them. And, you know, he's been meeting FDA, EPA, and all this sort of thing, and you know, but it's just fascinating. Just talking to this guy was just very interesting to me, so... he's talking about the way they can increase fuel efficiencies by using these particles and catalytic converters, et cetera. And beyond my capability to understand, but man, it is
certainly among the buzzwords, one of what we have assumed for the last 10 years to be a leading edge of technology, though. Like nanotechnology has kind of always been that thing, you know, like much like the singularity or something like that. Like that's been tech that we assume will always be very, very close when it happens, you know?
Well, and there's big things that can happen, everything from changing, you know, what, you know, cohesion properties of different substances, efficiency can be increased, and, you know, tensile strength and all that stuff. I don't know. Ain't no reason to believe or not to believe that nanotechnology can't make a huge difference.
So, in other news, and this is the big story of this show, folks.
Yep.
Mars is the subject of a NASA announcement tomorrow.
Yep. Red rocks. Yay, yay.
Math, disco, potatoes, space vodka.
So NASA, you know, on Friday is like, hey, guys, be sure to check us out Monday. That's me. Sorry.
Is there here? Copy and paste that, and we'll take a look at this. Is there any speculation as to what they're about to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, one of the what's that, Justin?
Rumor has it that that it's something to do with water on Mars, right?
Yawn. I mean, look, it's okay. What would be significant is if they were saying there's currently liquid water on Mars.
Well, Brian.
What?
Ding, ding.
What? Is that the rumor?
Justin, do you want to continue?
No, I mean, you would probably know more. All I know is the headline that the rumor is that it's liquid water on Mars.
So what it is one of the experts, one of the people they're bringing in there, he had done, like 5 years ago as a graduate student, some of his research, they looked at these brown weird outflows, these brown stains, if you will, on Mars. Mm. All right, I said it.
They call them skid marks. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay, and so they found these brown stains on Mars, which were like, well, these are kind of curious. What causes this? And they seem like recent features, and there is speculation that this is some water and mud, some briny sort of solution that's not, you know, evaporating immediately right away. And it's what's happening is that there may be water under the surface of Mars and fissures or some other capacity, and that there might be seasonally it oozes out under the surface.
So, okay. We touched on this before, but and I apologize that I'm going to go into a little bit of spoiler territory, but one of the ideas brought up in Kim Stanley Robinson's new book, Aurora, is that there's two types of planets, either planets that can support life, in which case they will be occupied with some form of life that will likely find our bodies to be a delicious place to run rampant, in which case we probably don't want to occupy those planets, and planets in which case they are not hospitable to life, closer to Mars or whatever, in which case we can dig tunnels but never quite terraform. It really hit me hard because it made me jump to team, I really hope there's no life on Mars, because I don't want there to be anything that keeps us from colonizing that real estate. But you guys had a different take on it, and I'd love to, in light of the fact that there might be liquid water on Mars, and of course what that would mean for
well, hold on, proto-life. Before we get to the big, can we... NASA sometimes has, like, a history of, like, announcing stuff that they have to kind of moonwalk back, right?
You're talking about the silicon-based life?
Arsenic-based life, right?
Yeah. Arsenic.
Arsenic, that's right.
Arsenic-based life, and then wasn't there the like water on the asteroid or whatever that they or life on some celestial body that they had to kind of moonwalk back after a little bit. Like, I mean, I'm just saying, as the wolf once told. Jules and Vincent, let's not start shaking each other's hands just yet.
So, and let's flash back almost 20 years ago at the South Lawn of the White House when President Bill Clinton introduced Rock 84001, which was the Mars meteorite that we found in Antarctica or whatever that looked like it had what could have been microbial life in there. It certainly looked different than what we've come to expect. 20 years later, we still don't know, and it's considered that it's maybe probably not life on there. But that was 20 years ago. We had a president stand up and say, hey, we found this really cool rock that looks like there might be something on it. You know, and then that kind of, you know, a lot of other scientists came out and said, that's way smaller than any form of life. You know, we think there are naturally occurring examples how that could happen. And then it just kind of went, which, you know, was at that moment like such a cool announcement. I think they actually used that in, I forgot what movie they took that sound clip of him talking about
Contact?
This.
Because, I believe that it was footage from him talking about the completion of the Human Genome Project that they used in the movie Contact. But
well, that would have been weird because Contact came out way before they completed that, though, didn't it?
Oh, was it? You know what? Actually, I think you're right. It was some other scientific general announcement. Like it was according to like the director's commentary on Contact, they were all like, yeah, this was just on TV one day when we were writing the script, and we're like, whoa, that's so vague and general, it could apply to anything, so we applied it here. I guess I got my time mixed up on there.
I could be mistaken too. So anyhow, yeah, I think that this likely sounds like it's going to be evidence of there presently being, we know that there was water on Mars before. That's not really a debate anymore. The evidence overshows that there is just, you know, liquid is on the surface of that it's, we accept that it was wet and marshy wet at some point. The idea that water could presently be on there is still kind of an exciting idea, and that if they have some conclusive evidence of that, cool.
By the way, apparently Bill Clinton was annoyed that he was used in Contact.
Oh, really?
I'd have said that was an inappropriate, unauthorized use of his image and words.
Oh, get out. Boo. Ruined his legacy with that attitude. Way to go.
Yeah. So,
let's dial back in, though. Let's say there's water right now. I mean, outside of life, is there any implications of there being liquid water that we should get excited about? Does that mean that all of a sudden, let's say absent of life, is this great news that we could just drill a well and get like this briny water, have access?
Dude, Elon Musk is designing a swimming pool right now for Mars.
I believe that.
Yeah, I mean, this is it means that humans on Mars becomes a lot easier. The presence of water on there means if we want to try to terraform it, very, very, very exciting possibilities there.
I hadn't really thought about that. I thought in terms of like, sure, there's lots of water, but it's locked up in the poles. But if you land, let's say, you know, obviously if you're going to colonize any place, it would be, I assume, closest to the equator where it's warmest. But if there's liquid water, even if it is super briny or, you know, with super salty, then at least you don't have to go to the poles to go get water. You don't have to take it with you. That would be pretty huge.
So what would be the new evidence? What do you think would have happened between now and Homeboy's theories that would make NASA super pumped to go out and do a dog and pony show?
Satellite footage that shows change over the last few years. Like, if they have satellite footage from 5 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 1 year ago, and you're actually watching stuff leaking out on the surface, I think that's fairly compelling evidence that we have some form of liquid water seeping onto the surface.
So that would be, it would be something that they might have tagged and just kept an eye on.
Watch real time, sure.
You know, it's like, oh, well, look at this, man. We're seeping, baby.
I mean, that's my guess. Andrew probably knows better than me. Does that sound right to you?
I would say that's exactly what my guess would be.
Mm. Oh. Who's excited to see seep used in headlines? That's great. Seep is such an amazing word.
Dude, if you're going to form a band, form it right now and call it Seep.
Seep. Now, Seep's a better album title, right? Like, they'd be like, you know, the Four Horsemen with Seep.
Martian horses. Seep. No, I'm down for that, man. I think that's huge.
So then, yeah, then what's the over-under on them saying, like, oops, somebody got a thumbprint on the satellite image, and it turns out it's fake.
By the way, along that line, Jeff Gerstmann on Twitter today tweeted out very timely. He tweeted out the Mr. Show America Blows Up the Moon sketch that begins with the Martian photos that have chocolate stains all over it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Dude, I don't know. I mean, it's super exciting. Obviously, the more that we talk about Mars, I think the better we are as a human society, because it is in, you know, as Brian takes a sip of his Occupy Mars cup that he got from SpaceX. Like, this is, you know, really the explorative front of our time. We are privileged to be alive that this is even a discussion that we would be having, and that it seems reasonable that it might happen at you know, that great progress toward it could happen in our lifetime.
Speaking of which, your friend of mine, TJ Gokul, who brought us out to SpaceX, unfortunately, I was not able to synchronize and go for another visit while I was out in L.A., but he was kind enough to give me a gift of those promotional Visit Mars posters that that SpaceX has put together. They're all coiled up right now, so I can't see them. But they're fantastic, dude. They look amazing, and they're going to be prominently displayed in our house.
Sweet. Gentlemen, do you want to go to picks?
I do. Sure. I'm kind of torn. Can I do just a quick pick?
Do you want to do two picks, Brian? Because I ain't got none for here.
Okay, great. Here's my obvi pick that I've already talked about too much. This Friday, The Martian comes out. I'm very excited about the movie. That's all I'm going to say about it.
Everybody go see it. Like, put all the money in the world in the box office for that. Pump that movie up. Let's make, like, really cool, smart science movies that are like, yay, space, do really well at the box office. And go buy his book.
Agreed.
And what I'm excited about is a lot of the reviews I read one review that, you know, it's from a fairly harsh critic, and he liked it, and kind of mocking, gentle mocking, called it that the title of the movie should be Sastronauts, which I thought was very funny.
Oh, because everything is all like coy and with a wink.
Everything's
and
quippy, and, you know, like, and a lot of that kind of certainly comes from the book, but that it's he made the point that it is almost very popcorn, and not in a Transformers kind of way, but in a big human, this is about, you know, human solving a problem. And it, at some point, it kind of feels almost like a formula sort of Hollywood thing for as unconventional of a premise as it has, which made me really excited, because my least favorite elements of The Martian are when it gets stone cold, like, you know, as thrilling as a spreadsheet with a few notes of like, hey, ABBA sucks. Am I right? Middle finger emojis. Like, so I'm super excited and I'm really, I'm pumped. I hope that it does really, really well. And I just want to take this time to point out that I met Andy Weir before Brian did.
Yeah, and I have the photograph of you giving me the middle finger to prove it. this was what was amazing, for those of you who don't know, is 2 years ago when somebody over Twitter had suggested that I read The Martian, and I was blown away. And I think out of just the joy in my heart as I finished it, I texted both Justin and Tom Merritt saying, like, guys, have you read The Martian? It's so good.
It's crazy. You guys would never believe it. Brian couldn't shut up about The Martian. He was tweeting about it constantly. It's unlike anything we've ever seen.
and then missing not a single heartbeat is I get a photo of Andy Weir smiling next to a grinning Justin Robert Young giving me the middle finger. It was freaking amazing.
Super pumped. He was a really, really nice guy. I love the book, and I think the movie's going to be great.
But that's not my pick. My pick. I am super, super excited about. A few people probably who follow me live have already guessed it. But there was you guys know. Have you guys seen Mr. Robot yet? Have you all seen that?
I'm looking forward to watching it, so my friends will shut up about it.
Good. Okay. Mr. Robot is quite possibly one of the best, quite possibly the best television show of 2015. If it's not, it's because it's tied with Daredevil and the second season of Rick and Morty. But the somebody wrote us on Cord Killers saying, you know, you're talking about the cinematography of Mr. Robot. I kept thinking of the show, and you need to watch this show. And so we read the letter. We're like, yeah, sure. We'll get around to watching that someday, along with all the other crap that you tell us to watch. The next morning... And when I say you, I mean
jerks tell us to watch.
It's like, look, everybody. I mean, you have no idea how many emails we get of people telling us to watch things. The next morning, we get an overnight express delivery from the U.S. Postal Service with two copies of the two-disc first season Blu-ray of the Channel 4 original Utopia. And... only because somebody cared enough to spend $40 to $60 to get it to us overnight, did Tom Merritt and I start watching it. And there are many shows that people will tell you, give it a couple of episodes to blah, 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 blah. It's not the case. Utopia, just watch the first episode. You're either in or you're horrified. Notice there's no out. Like, even if you don't want to watch it, it's just because it's too grisly for you. It's exquisite, gorgeous cinematography, set locations, the whole set design. The acting is wonderful. The soundtrack is incredible. I can't say enough about it. Here's the only problem, is that if you're in the United States, you find yourself in the odd situation that you cannot legally watch it. The only way to legally stream it is either, if you're in the United States and willing to lie about where you live, you can use a VPN to stream it from Channel 4 in the UK, or you have to buy the Blu-ray and watch it that way. There's no way to just watch for the sake of watching, which is a real shame because, I take that back. I would actually advise against streaming. I would say just buy the Blu-ray, because I started to show it to Bonnie streaming. And keep in mind, this is, you know, we owned the Blu-ray at this point because someone had sent it to us. And it made such a difference to see it in 1080p with full quality without commercials that I was kind of glad that we were forced out to the living room to watch it there. It's fantastic. It's amazing.
Not to be confused with the very short-lived, expensive American TV show Utopia, the reality show that was... quite
nope,
a disaster.
Nope, not that. No. It's if just look for the color yellow. If you're curious if it's the right Utopia or the wrong Utoria, Utopia. Look for just amazing use of the color yellow.
Available right now for $34 on Amazon Prime.
Worth every penny. Highly recommend.
And that's in the right region? Are Blu-rays region locked?
Like they can
available
be.
For $7.11 for a one disc version on Amazon.
You know what it says here?
Doesn't sound at all like a Chinese knockoff. Not at all.
It
guys.
Says here this will not play on most Blu-ray players sold in North America, Central America, South America, Japan, North Korea, South Korea, Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Southeast Asia. Learn more. Man, it's so weird because unfortunately, and I'll let you know what you're in for. I've only seen the first season. The first season was extraordinary, but from what I understand, the second season ended on a cliffhanger, and there's a little bit of a Firefly situation where it got canceled at an unfortunate time. And I'm real quick. I'm looking at the frequently bought together, and I'm seeing Black Mirror there as well. If you haven't heard on Cord Killers, we were talking about how Black Mirror is. Has been, I guess that's tomorrow's news.
Renewed for 12 episodes.
12 episodes on Netflix. Yeah. So anyway, that's my pick. My pick is Utopia. Go watch The Martian. Hooray for Black Mirror. That's my whole take.
All right,
Justin.
So yesterday I went to go see Straight Outta Compton. I liked it a lot. It got me because Ice Cube's son plays Ice Cube, and he looks a lot like Ice Cube, and he sounds a lot like Ice Cube, except he's probably a lot nicer than Ice Cube was in real life at that point in his life, because Ice Cube produced the movie and put his son to play himself. And I'm like, man, I really like Ice Cube. I think and Ice Cube, especially as he was first breaking into acting. Had a really interesting choice of roles. So the later in that night, I started watching Three Kings, which I really, really like. You know, it kind of, if that didn't start like the David O. Russell kind of train, it had to be the movie before that, which escapes me. But I really dug that. Neither of them are my picks, although I like them both. I'm going to pick a podcast. If you, I think we all, everybody here a fan of Conan? The Barbarian franchise?
Sure.
What with the sword and sorcery and, you know...
Robert E. Howard all the way, yeah.
I mean, I was just singing the praises of the Beastmaster, sure.
Sure. So there is a podcast called Scald, S-K-A-L-D. It's by a man named Aubrey Sitterson. He is a former editor for Marvel Comics. He also does this other wrestling stuff, and I'm going to be on his podcast tomorrow to recap WWE Raw, but in talking with him, he told me about this other podcast that he does. He writes everything and reads everything in one take, which blew me away because I've read like Andrew's audiobooks, and I can't fathom the idea of reading a 20-minute chunk of audiobook effectively. In one take, and if he screws up, he goes back and does the whole thing. But it's super fun. If you are into this kind of fiction, it's well written. It's super fun to listen to him go through it, and I think it deserves more attention. So check it out. Scald, S-K-A-L-D by Aubrey Sitterson.
Right. That's on. Cool. I love that idea of that kind of concept. Gentlemen, it's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.